Hi, this is Joe Levine with a podcast for Chapter 5. I know that it can be tough to understand population growth. It's one thing for us to tell you that populations grow exponentially and continue to grow unless something stops them. But it's something else to really get what that means. Talking about bacteria doesn't really help a lot of people because, after all, you can't see them, and an awful lot of them can fit in a test tube. So here's an example about something bigger. An animal whose ability to reproduce are the subject of lots of old jokes. We're talking about rabbits. Our story begins about 150 years ago in Australia, which was, at the time, being colonized by Englishmen. For many ex-Englishmen, Australia was a bloody good place to live. It just didn't have the right kinds of things to hunt. I guess kangaroos and koala bears didn't make the grade. But anyway, in 1859, a bloke named Thomas Austin decided that he missed the British sport of rabbit hunting. So he took it on himself to import and release 24 wild English rabbits on his property. Those rabbits, it turned out, felt right at home and did what rabbits do naturally. At first, Austin and his buddies thought this had been an awesome idea. They couldn't believe the number of rabbits they could shoot in no time. In the seventh year after the introduction, Austin and his friends shot 14,253 rabbits on his property alone. By 1869, just 10 years after the original introduction, 2,033,000 rabbits had been killed on Austin's property. Within a few years, hunters all over the country could shoot as many as 1,200 rabbits in a single morning. But hunters' delight turned to Australia's nationwide despair. The fast-breeding rabbits encountered no predators or diseases anywhere. As you study this chapter, you'll realize this means that no natural processes killed rabbits or lowered their reproductive rates when their population was large and concentrated. In other words, rabbits in Australia didn't have any density-dependent population controls working on them. In the absence of those controls, their population grew exponentially. It spread across the countryside in what locals described as a great gray blanket. Soon, Australia's rabbit population was estimated at 1 billion individuals. So, if you ever hear the term breeding like rabbits, you now know exactly what it means. Wherever they went, rabbits devoured anything they could eat. Several unique native habitats were nearly destroyed altogether, and several native species were driven to extinction locally. What's more, the rabbits ate so much that they caused major losses for sheep and cattle ranchers, whose livestock suddenly had to compete with the pests for food. By the late 1980s, rabbits were costing Australia as much as $90 million annually in lost sheep production alone, and an extra $20 million on rabbit control. Naturally, ranchers tried to control rabbits any way they could think of, shooting them, poisoning them, plowing, blasting, and fumigating their underground warrens, but nothing worked. These techniques couldn't work. Why? Because rabbits' high growth rate created an impossible situation. All these techniques, shooting, poisoning, and so on, are density-independent means of population control. And even if farmers managed to kill 70% of the rabbit population at any given time, the invaders would recoup those losses in a single year. What was needed? Some kind of real density-dependent population regulation. After lots of preliminary experiments, government scientists introduced a rabbit virus called myxomatosis during the 1950s. At first, nearly all viral strains were lethal, and most rabbits were highly susceptible. The disease spread like wildfire across the country, killing countless rabbits. The situation made headlines around the world. It even inspired a series of Bugs Bunny cartoons about rabbititis. But the control didn't last. The most deadly strains of virus disappeared with the rabbits they killed. As a result, less deadly strains became more common. In the meantime, rabbits that survived evolved resistance to the virus. Ultimately, virus and rabbits reached an equilibrium that allowed host and parasites to coexist, and rabbit populations started to grow again. What happened here, by the way, was a classic example of evolution in action, as you'll learn in the next unit. Meanwhile, researchers began experimenting with a new virus called rabbit calcivirus. They wanted to test not only how effective the new virus was at eliminating rabbits, but also whether or not the virus would jump to other species, something they didn't want. The experiments were conducted under quarantine on an offshore island. But despite that quarantine, the virus somehow jumped to the mainland in the late 1990s. Everybody held their breath. Would the virus kill rabbits? Would it kill other animals, natives and non-natives alike? Thus far, results have been positive. Calcivirus has not jumped to native mammals, to domestic livestock, or to humans, thankfully. But it has spread rapidly among rabbits, killing roughly 65% of them in many areas. In arid southern environments where rabbit populations were particularly large, calcivirus knocked them down to 15 or 20% of their original density. In several of those places, the results have been dramatic, including the regrowth of some native trees and shrubs thought to be locally extinct. The decline in rabbit numbers also seems to have given a boost to the population sizes of local species, including red kangaroos, gray kangaroos, common wombats, and other small vertebrates. Australians are keeping their fingers crossed. Australia's experience is a dramatic example of what can happen when a plant or animal is introduced into a new environment. But it certainly isn't the only example. As you'll see in the next chapter, the United States is struggling with populations of many introduced species whose growth has gone wild here. Do you know of any affecting your state?